Gurmagath, Eileen, you're listening to The Late Debate with Cormac O'Hara, standing in for Audrey this evening and this week. Joining me in the studio this evening is Alan Farrell, Fine Gael, TD with Fine Gael Dublin North and member of the Justice Committee. Mary Lou MacDonald, Deputy Leader of Sinn Féin and TD for Dublin Central. We have also Michael Finucane, who is a solicitor, and Mark Kelly, Director of the Irish Council for Civil Liberties. You can contact the programme this evening by text on 51551, email latedebate@rte.ie, and you can follow us on Twitter at latedebate.rte. Well, tonight we are going to look at Minister Alan Shatter's Doyle's statements about the recording of phone calls to and from Gorda stations, and also his apology and correction of the Doyle record regarding Gorda whistleblowers John Wilson and Maurice McCabe. And let's have a listen first of all to Minister Shatter's apology and correction of the Doyle record today.
I want to say very clearly that having re-examined the facts and further considered the matter, I believe more should have been done during the course of the Omani investigation to obtain information from and ascertain the views and experiences of the whistleblowers. Further and better efforts could and should have been made to secure productive engagement with them in the investigation of their claims. I therefore wish to correct the record of this House that the whistleblowers, quote, did not cooperate with the Garda investigations that took place. I acknowledge that this statement was incorrect. It was never my intention to mislead the House, and I believe it's appropriate that I apologise to both and withdraw the statements made.
And that was Minister Alan Shatter in the Doyle today. Mary Lou MacDonald, he's faced controversy for months. Now he's corrected the record. He has apologised. He's done enough, surely, to end this controversy.
Well, he hasn't, Cormac, and just first of all to deal with the apology itself, of course it is welcome that very belatedly the Minister has corrected the record of the Doyle. This matter should not have lingered in the way that the Minister very consciously allowed it to linger. He said in the course of his apology that he had reason to re-examine the facts, and that this influenced his decision to make his apology. The facts, of course, have not changed, and the facts have been in the public domain for quite some time. And the facts are and were that the two whistleblowers were frustrated internally in raising their concerns. I would go further and say they were in fact discouraged, blocked, that there was a connivance to attempt to silence these men. Out of frustration, they took matters elsewhere, including to the Oireachtas.
And he acknowledges all of that.
Well,
he's re-examined the facts, as you say, he's apologised. He's corrected the Doyle record.
The Assistant Commissioner O'Mahony, in front of the Public Accounts Committee, when I asked him, had he spoken to the whistleblowers, made it clear that he had not in the course of his investigation. Had he made any attempt to speak to them? No, he had not. All of those facts were pretty clear-cut, and I don't accept that there was some re-examination of the facts or some new facts that presented. Alan Shatter has known all along, in my view, that the statement that he put on the Doyle record was absolutely incorrect. It is my view that that statement was made as part of a number of statements that the Minister made, deliberately attempting to discredit and to undermine the whistleblowers. He also said...
Do you think he deliberately misled the Doyle then?
It is my view that he misled the Doyle, and he allowed that misleading statement to stand. And I don't accept when he says that he had no intention to mislead the Doyle.
I
challenged him on that today. I challenged him quite forcefully on it. He took umbrage at it. But I cannot accept when he says that he had no intention to mislead. I think when you track the turn of events in respect of John Wilson and Sergeant Maurice McCabe, I think it is very clear that the Minister was on a very particular narrative, which was very clearly aimed at undermining these men and raising a public doubt. And
so
the consequences
you don't at all accept the fact, the merit of the correction of the Doyle record, or that the apology was in good faith?
I accept that the record has now been belatedly corrected. Let me acknowledge that. I think the Minister has made this statement today, and I consider the apology to be mealy-mouthed and minimalist. I think he made it under pressure. And I think he allowed for a considerable period of time, when all of the facts, clear-cut as they were available to him, he allowed his statement, which was wrong, which was totally factually inaccurate, damaging and hurtful reputationally and personally to these men, to stand on the Dáil record. And I don't accept for a second that he's had some Pauline conversion or that he's come across additional facts or that his analysis shifted. I think this was simply a matter of brute political pressure
Alan
on him
Farrell
today.
Of Fine Gael, an apology and a correction under duress, according to Mary Lou MacDonald of Sinn Féin, is no apology or correction at all worth talking about?
Well, clearly I'm not going to agree with what Mary Lou's had to say. Minister took to his feet this evening, has apologised, has corrected the record of the Dáil, has explained as to why he felt it necessary to do so. And yes, a considerable period of time has passed. That considerable period should most likely have been a little bit shorter. But here we are.
How much shorter?
It's the 26th of March. We are dealing with the matter now as best we can. Minister Shatter has made statements this evening, and during the course of the day, he was on his feet, I believe, for in excess of 2 hours.
You say it should have been shorter.
I personally believe that it should have been shorter, given his opportunity to re-examine the evidence that was presented to him. Well, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about in the following the production of the Garda Inspectorate report and indeed the O'Mahony report. I think given the circumstances and given the fact that he was abroad for a considerable period over the last number of weeks.
So at least days ago then?
No, I think the opportunity to withdraw his remarks, today was the day to do it, given the information.
So how could it have been shorter then?
What I'm referring to, Cormac, is the fact that the Garda Inspectorate report, which has been published, which has been agreed by the majority of the opposition, I understand. I'm not entirely sure. I think they are. Sinn Féin are in agreement with it. We're proposing to implement 7 of the key recommendations contained within that report. And Minister Shatter has, as I've said, re-examined the information that was presented to him over the last number of days.
But you said the correction
which was the first opportunity he had to do so on the floor of the Dáil.
Just a few minutes ago that the correction and the apology should have come sooner. When?
No, the opportunity to make a correction to the record of the Dáil and to apologise to the two whistleblowers, the first opportunity of which was to do so today.
So you're saying the report should have been sooner?
In fact, if it were not for events, the apology would have in fact been made tomorrow. However, due to the untimely death of a colleague of Mary Lou and myself in the Dáil, tomorrow's Dáil sitting has been cut short dramatically, and that's why the statements on both matters, both the matter with regard to the penalty points and with regard to the reason that we're here this evening, which is to discuss the recording of telephone communication at Garda stations across the country.
Do you think this will be the end of it now, the end of the controversy?
No, I don't. I think the opportunity now that we have been presented with to conduct a commission of inquiry, which An Taoiseach himself is heading. We will receive a report, I hope, in the near future from the acting Garda Commissioner, Commissioner O'Mahony. Am I correct?
Noreen O'Sullivan.
And that information will go a long way toward the establishment of this commission of inquiry, setting out the terms of reference, which will be made available as soon as they are produced.
And why do you think the controversy will rumble on then?
No, I'm not. I don't think that the controversy is going to rumble on. I think this is an opportunity for us to provide clarity and information and put it into the public domain. There are thousands of tapes, just short of 2,500, plus from 2008 to November 2013, recorded on data devices, modern data devices, which were invested in 2008. That all has to be typed out in terms of transcripts.
Okay, and we'll get
the analysis
of
all that.
We will get to
that.
But Mark Kelly of the Irish Council for Civil Liberties, do you think, having listened to Minister Alan Shatter's statements in the Dáil today, is that enough? Can he now go back to daily business without being harassed by some members of the media and the opposition?
Well, I wouldn't really accept the characterisation of harassment. To start with, I think the Minister himself has accepted that these are very serious matters. The apology is welcome. It's been graciously accepted, as I understand it, by the two whistleblowers. Mm. And that's a very important stage. But, I mean, I have to say that I'm very concerned that the controversy, in the bigger sense of the term, will rumble on, because We are in a moment at the moment where there is a crisis of confidence in our systems of Garda accountability. And I was thinking back, Cormac, 5 weeks ago, I was in this studio with Mary Lou's parliamentary colleague, Padraig McLaughlin, and Alan's parliamentary colleague, Michelle Mahern. And with a completely straight face, Michelle Mahern was telling us at the time that the appointment of retired Judge Cook to look into GSOC bugging would, in and of itself, be sufficient to restore confidence in our systems of parliamentary or Garda accountability. Now, I was counting this evening before I came in here the number of reviews of a piecemeal nature that have been set up since I was in here 5 weeks ago. Seven. I got to. There have been seven, up to and including the only one which is of a truly judicial nature, which has been announced today. But what's your point?
Because I'm sure Alan Farrell, without putting words in your mouth, would say that's the minister dealing with the issues as they come forward.
This is firefighting of a series of crises that have a common origin. And the origin is that our systems of Garda accountability are broken and public trust in them has gone. Now, from the beginning, 5 weeks ago, the ICCL and others have been saying to the government, there is the possibility, there's legislation there, the Act of 2004, which they finally used today, that would enable you to set up a comprehensive review with proper powers of inquiry. They've now announced an inquiry, but our understanding, our concern is that that will be limited purely to this very serious taping instance, and that we will again be missing the opportunity to put in place something that will be capable of beginning to restore public confidence.
Alan Farrell?
Well, I'm not necessarily going to disagree with what Mark has to say. I do believe that the opportunity for the minister to address the various issues that have beset his ministry for the last number of months have had to result in inquiries of various levels to be conducted in order to get to the bottom of it.
So will now, the government I don't think about bringing those together.
Well, can I say I don't think I can answer that question directly because I'm not at the cabinet table. But what I will say is that the review of the 2005 Garda Act that the committee that I'm fortunate enough to sit on will conduct over the next number of weeks. The legislation which is currently going through the Dáil with regard to the protection of whistleblowers and the vindication, indeed, of our existing whistleblowers, whom I hope will be vindicated as we investigate. Justice Cook looks through the other aspects of the Garda controversies, such as GSOC, and indeed the other inquiry through Guerin, I believe the gentleman's name is
Sean
Guerin. Thank you. That is taking place now. Whether or not they'll all be put under one roof, I'm not sure that is entirely necessary.
Okay,
but what it will do, it will allow the general public to begin to restore their confidence in the operation of An Garda Síochána and the administration of justice in our
country.
Well, let me get Michael Finucane's opinion on this, a practicing solicitor. Is Minister Shatter, Michael Finucane, doing enough establishing these reviews and inquiries as the issues come up, or should we have a root and branch overarching inquiry and review?
Well, the position that the Minister for Justice is in, as distinct from the individual Alan Shatter, is, I think, untenable now, because what happened today was not one person apologising to some people for an unfortunate remark on some kind of personal level. The Minister for Justice, holder of one of the top cabinet posts beneath the level of Taoiseach and Deputy Taoiseach, made several statements that are the diametric opposite of things that he's been saying for many months now. He did so on the back of other people in cabinet announcing a commission of investigation into matters that fall squarely within his remit. The minister appears to have been making statements previously that were politically expedient at that time, and he is now making statements that are the complete opposite of what he was saying because it is politically expedient to do the exact opposite. Now hang on, just let me finish. That is the office holder contradicting himself within the space of about 2 or 3 months. apparently having been relieved of his responsibilities by senior cabinet colleagues who have decided to impose a commission of investigation before he came in and explained himself why it was necessary. And the overwhelming impression is that the second, third or fourth most powerful minister in the Irish state is being brought into the Dáil by senior colleagues. The impression screams naughty schoolboy, and as he sits flanked by the Taoiseach and flanked by the Minister for Finance, both of whom who have gone out to bat for him in recent days, it demeans the office. It demeans the notion of democratic government.
Is that not
And I think, hang on a second, I think if the man is going to salvage any of his own personal dignity, then I think he ought to resign. Because every day he stays in the office doing things, he damages any prospect of rescuing the situation. And anything that he suggests at this point, unfortunately, carries a taint.
51551, Alan Farrell of Fine Gael, you stand shoulder to shoulder in support. Alan Shatter, how do you respond to that?
I do. I'm taken aback somewhat, almost as much as I was on Sunday evening when I was reading about Patrick Nulty. But I'm taken aback that we would think that a minister and his colleagues would be at one another's throats in some sort of adversarial format. On finding out the information which was presented to an Taoiseach on Sunday, he decided that this event was so seismic in the Irish state that he himself would take charge of it, would decide that it was necessary to get to the very, very bottom of this matter, and that the manner in which that would be achieved following conversations with the minister and with the AG was to instigate a commission of inquiry.
But isn't that the point? Over the head of the relevant minister.
Let's not forget now that the conversation took place before this. Remember that this announcement was made on Tuesday after the cabinet meeting. It was the first opportunity that the cabinet had to discuss the findings that the AG had presented to an Taoiseach on Sunday. And the first conversation that the Minister for Justice has with regard to this matter was again on Monday. So the opportunity to take charge of it, and it's the Taoiseach's prerogative. He is the Taoiseach, he is the leader of government, he is the de facto head of state.
But is it not a fact that his department was sent a letter about this issue? And who ends up dealing with it finally but an Taoiseach? Also, we can go back as well and look at the penalty points controversy. Minister Alan Shatter resisted a review or an inquiry for many weeks until an Taoiseach announced a review. Isn't that correct? So we have a number of instances where the minister...
This is not a matter... Sorry, Cormac, apologies for interrupting, but this is not a matter, in my view, and it's certainly not a matter that the cabinet would agree that it is some sort of adversarial, as Michael said, some sort of scolding the schoolboy in the corner. Nonsense.
Do you not accept that the Taoiseach has gone over the head? Michael Finucane.
That's exactly it. The minister has been left to deal with one problem after another that is sucking public confidence out of the government in general and the Gardaí in particular. And the person whose brief it is to make sure that that doesn't happen is the Minister for Justice. And when matters have reached critical levels over the course of the last couple of months, the distinct impression given by the actions of the Taoiseach and most recently the Minister for Finance are that they have stepped in because the Minister for Justice can't handle it anymore.
I'm sorry, that's just not true.
The first phone call of the Attorney General about a justice matter should be to the Minister for Justice. It wasn't. The person who should have been out dealing with this matter in the public to explain what was happening should have been the Minister for Justice. It wasn't. Eventually, he ends
as a
up
lawyer,
in the
Dáil. You should know that the AG doesn't answer to the Minister for Justice. She answers.
I didn't say he answered to the Minister for Justice.
But the point that you're making is some sort of hierarchical situation. And I want to clarify that the hierarchy is that the Taoiseach is the head of government.
That's not the point I'm
making. And in the cabinet, the AG reports to the Taoiseach.
Let's hear Mary Lou MacDonald. Where do you stand on this?
Well, I think there is certainly merit in that. You could tell today that Minister Shatter was present and alert and making his apology, his very late apology, and correcting the Dáil record because it was politically necessary. And I have no doubt that he was urged along that route by some of his colleagues. But just to make another point in this, because it would be wrong to create the impression that the hapless Minister Shatter is just beset by all of these controversies coming at him, you know, and him sort of the subject, you know, of them. The reality is that Alan Shatter has caused a huge amount of difficulties for himself. So to return to our whistleblowers, Alan Shatter decided to abuse and to attempt to undermine those men. That was a decision. He took a political decision to do that. We now know that that has backfired on him. And by the way, those men have already been vindicated in terms of the Comptroller and Auditor General's report and indeed the Garda Inspectorate. So there's no question of them awaiting vindication. They are vindicated. But Alan Shatter put himself in the middle of that mess. On the GSOC bugging controversy, he, in a manner that was actually disturbing, sought to nearly portray it as some kind of comedy episode when he speculated as to whether or not patrons of a coffee shop were in fact bugging GSOC.
Did GSOC not say subsequently that they were mistaken about the evidence? They were mistaken about the allegations?
Let me make my point.
Is that not a point, though?
He hauls in the head of that commission. He seeks to minimise, to avoid, to evade the issue. He finally is forced into a position where there has to be a review of matters. He doesn't go the whole hog in respect of a commission of investigation. But he did huge damage and hugely mishandled that issue to try and play it down and to nearly cast an aspersion against GSOC itself rather than facing the issue square on. And now we come to these tapes. Possibly the most serious of the controversies to arise. And we are asked now to believe that the minister knew nothing about it, that he only got wind of this on Monday evening, didn't see a very important letter that had been couriered to his department on the Tuesday morning. We're asked to believe that the practice of taping these conversations was ceased, presumably by the Garda Commissioner, in November of last year. We're asked to believe and accept that the minister knew nothing about that, a very significant act on behalf of the commissioner. We're furthermore asked to accept that not alone did the minister not know, but that there was no reason why he should have known. So what the picture that emerges is not, a stoic minister dealing with legacy issues that come at him,
That is, in fairness, that is one interpretation, isn't it?
No. Well, I believe it's the interpretation that's borne out by the facts, by the actions, by the words and deeds of Alan Shatter himself.
But Mary Lou MacDonald, what you are putting forth is a minister that's telling untruths from week to week during this conference.
What I am putting forward, Cormac, is a minister that has had a decision in his head that he would defend in his mind at all costs the Garda Commissioner, Garda management, that any complaint or any controversy that pointed to difficulties or malpractice perhaps or anything scandalous perhaps, Alan Shatter was more than happy, and his words reflect this fact, to minimise and to try and set those things aside. But above all, I am painting for you a picture of a minister who I do not believe is competent to carry out his functions.
You go much further than that. You are casting aspersions, are you not, on his bona fides and on how much of the truth he is telling from week to week during the controversy. Is that not the case?
Well, I'm casting an aspersion on his bona fides in his handling of the whistleblowers, and I stand over that. I'm certainly reflecting the fact that when the issue of the bugging of the GSOC offices emerged, Alan Shatter wanted to know nothing about it, set it aside, seemed to miss the critical importance of even the potential of this being, a matter of fact.
But should you not accept what a minister says in Dáil Éireann in good faith? because you were ripping him to shreds, are you not, here? You were saying, we are asked to believe, and then you outline what he says. Should you not accept what he says in Dáil Éireann,
Cormac,
to the people,
well,
to
absolve in
good faith?
I'll tell you what I should do, what my function is in the Dáil, and there's been some effort to portray the opposition as playing the man rather than the ball. That's not the case. My function as an elected parliamentarian is, and sitting on the opposition benches, is to hold the government to account and the ministers of government to account, and to represent those that democratically elect me, and to call things as I see them, and where there are clear anomalies, clear contradictions,
Mary Lou,
and clear cases of incompetence,
Alan Farrell,
you've
effectively called the minister a liar. You've called his character into question, and it's not the first time you've done it. And to me, at this stage, it's a bit old hat, if I'm quite honest with you. It's the duty of the opposition, as well as to attempt to hold the government to account, to oppose. And that's exactly what you're doing. But what you're doing you're playing Alan Shatter instead of
the fact that he's attempting to deal with issues
that he himself has had nothing to do with. Now, the opposition have kept on banging the he should resign drum. But there's only two real reasons why anybody should resign from any position, whether it be a ministry or a director or an employee or whatever. Incompetence, mm-hmm, or some form of criminality or otherwise. Now, the minister certainly isn't engaged in any criminal matters, and he most certainly is not lying. I think Alan Shatter has a very proud record in Dáil Éireann.
Can I ask you about the incompetence issue?
I'll come to that. He has a very proud record in Dáil Éireann. He has a very proud record of putting forward legislation from the opposition benches. Indeed, he's still the only member of the opposition in Dáil history to have a bill accepted and implemented, which is now legislation, from the opposition benches. But can I say, as
what has that got to do with these issues?
It's to do with his character.
It's got to do with the diversion.
The point that I'm making in regards to his character is that Alan has put forward a number of solutions, a number of suggested solutions to issues that have popped up during his ministry. He did not instigate them. He is not the reason why they occurred. But instead of focusing on how to resolve the issues that have befallen his ministry, you're attacking the man.
Oh, OK. And I know Mark Kelly wants to get in, but you raised, Alan Farrell, the issue of incompetence. Now, I want you to address
I addressed the issue... What do you call the following?
Okay, what do you call the following? Urgent letters that are sent to his department that he does not see. Urgent matters in the public domain, as in the GSOC report, that his department or himself do not notice. And one arm of government...
I took the time to present a chronology of events for this evening.
One arm of government, under his remit, dealing with issues related to his department, mm-hmm, the AG not talking to himself or the mm-hmm Taoiseach. Mm-hmm. What is that then, if it's not incompetence?
Okay, well, no, that's not incompetence at all. It couldn't be further from incompetence. What you're talking about is a trail of correspondence, none of which landed on the minister's desk. The GSOC report was a press release. That was the detail which was sent to the Department of Justice, a press release.
And what's your point?
The point I'm making is that if GSOC don't present him with the information as to what was in the report or the actual findings that they had in regards to one instance, I might add, not 2,400 and whatever it was, plus the data files from 2008 onwards.
Happens to be
I'm
a very
about
important
one
report.
Incident, absolutely. But GSOC did not
missed.
GSOC did not present, nor were they required to present in their interpretation of the 2005 legislation, this report to Minister Shatter. So he was not aware.
So he shouldn't bother looking himself.
He was not aware
or charge
of
anyone
the report.
Within the department.
The other matter that you've raised in regards to the Attorney General. The Attorney General decided on her own bat, as is her responsibility to do so, to find as much information as she could before presenting it, presumably to Cabinet. She chose to do that. She chose when the information came to her at such a stage that it became imperative that she speak with the Taoiseach. Again, as the point I made earlier on, she reports to the Taoiseach, not to the Department of Justice or the Minister for Justice. She went to the Taoiseach on Sunday. The matter and the letters that you referred to were presented to the Minister for Justice on Monday. A conversation ensued. The Cabinet took place the next day. And that evening, the Commission of Inquiry was started as a process. That was 36 hours after the AG presented the information.
I know Mark Kelly wants to get in for some time.
Yeah, I mean, just to say, I really do think that we have to try to depersonalise this a little bit now. You know, if what we're really interested in is, are we going to have fit-for-purpose Garda accountability systems in future, then we need to look at what has actually been put on the table in terms of solutions. The Doyle spent the best part of 6 hours today talking about Alan Shatter, and it spent very little time actually talking about recommendations from the Garda Inspectorate on penalty points. One thing that the minister did say this afternoon that really struck me, and it's in his written speech as well, he said that he's believed since his appointment that it would be in the interests of An Garda Síochána and the public they serve that there be an independent review of An Garda Síochána. My ears really pricked up at that, because I thought there's something that offers the potential to look in a comprehensive way at what needs to change. But then he went on to talk about the Haddington Roads Agreement, and one particular appendix of the Haddington Road Agreement, which in fact deals with matters like working hours and overtime and so on. Hey, and it's perfectly true that there was an agreement with the representative associations within the framework of the Haddington Road Agreement that there would be a review, but the review is to be of things like overtime, structure, organisation and staffing, deployment of members in an industrial relations or a human resources context. The minister described it as an independent review. It's not going to be independent. It's going to be carried out by the Garda Inspectorate, which reports directly to the minister. The inspectorate works for the minister. So are we going to be back here in a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks? I really fear that we are. But I think there's a window of opportunity now to tackle this seriously.
This is why, Mark Kelly, when you say we should depersonalise this, this is why it's so difficult to do so, because you talk about reform and then you refer back to what he said in a disappointed tone.
Well, I think the minister. What I'm saying, Carl,
and the question is, and it was raised on this programme last night, if we're to move ahead with reform, the question is this the minister to push ahead with the reform?
What I'm saying, and I do want to say it very clearly, is that I think there's a very small window of opportunity now that could be grasped by the government to do exactly that. They've said they're going to report, they're going to appoint a retired Supreme Court judge. They've said they're going to give him proper terms of reference. We haven't heard about those. I sensed from Alan some openness to the possibility that those terms of reference be comprehensive and that they look at the full spectrum of issues that have come up over the past 4 to 5 weeks. That would be a very positive move.
OK, Michael Finucane, when Alan Farrell was talking about the GSOC report not being noticed by the minister or the department, you were shaking your head. Why?
Well, he called it a press release, but it's not a press release. I mean, I'm sitting here looking at an extract from it, and it's entitled Report in Accordance with Section 103 of the Garda Síochána Act. Now, it's not a press release, and to sort of minimise it and try to sort of downplay the significance of the whole episode that exposed the practice of recording phone calls at all
is
disingenuous.
You downloaded from their website?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll clarify. I won't interrupt.
This was in the context of Garda officers being prosecuted for assaulting a man in custody. So, I mean, it's ludicrous to suggest that the minister wouldn't have been aware of that case.
He said he simply wasn't. And he also said that GSOC themselves didn't feel that the report was important enough to send him a copy.
This prosecution was the first successful prosecution brought by GSOC against serving members of An Garda Síochána, certainly for indictable offences, if not the first, then one of the first. If we're going to talk about competence of office holders, if you're not aware of the detail of that investigation and that prosecution, then you're seriously into incompetence territory.
Alan, but
could I just say before Alan comes back in with, you know, sort of yet another let's defend the government line, I think we do need to move this on, because the sum total of what has happened over the last number of months with regard to our police force, the people that the citizens look at as the frontline representative face of the state. What has happened, if you think about this in terms of what a police officer does in their job, they're
road traffic practices have been seriously called into question. The quality of their criminal investigation in more serious offences has been called into question by members of An Garda Síochána. They've been accused of bugging the watchdog organisation, the Ombudsman Commission. They've been accused and are seriously suspected of having illegally recorded phone calls, which may include phone calls between arrested and detained persons and their solicitors. And right at the top of the organisation is the Garda Commissioner, who eventually, after defending all of this tooth and nail, was forced to resign. Now, what must an Irish citizen feel when they look and see a Garda uniform after all of this has happened? We do not need some sort of parliamentary sweeping under the carpet exercise of statutory tinkering and reform and revision. There needs to be root and branch reform of something meaningful in the way that people deal with An Garda Síochána, so that they can see for themselves that things have changed and it needs to happen quickly.
I need to take a break, but I need to give you a chance to respond,
sure,
Alan
Clark. Well, first and foremost, I think Mary Lou and Michael should go and have a conversation afterwards, because you do a marvellous representation of a member of the opposition, Michael. But can I just say, for the record, the GSOC report was published on their website and by via a press release was brought to the attention of the Department of Justice. They did not send the report to the Department of Justice. And that's just to offer clarity. Secondly, all of the issues that you've raised, up to and including the GSOC, up to and including the telephone recording and the penalty points issue, are being urgently reviewed by government for the purposes of ensuring that we can provide answers both to the public, to instill confidence or to reinstill confidence in An Garda Síochána, and in the administration of justice in our country. And I think, again, to go back to the point in regards to having a go at the man rather than addressing the issues that have arisen during his tenure as Minister for Justice is absolutely pointless.
You don't
and
need
will not
to
get
play the man
anywhere
to deal with these issues. Anybody's ever been sport will tell you.
I don't accept that holding a person, an office holder, to account for the discharge of their duties is making personalised comment. Let's accept then that the minister and the department didn't see the GSOC report in June. That's just because that's your contention and you're not budging from it. That report certainly sparked a reaction within the system, because we know that the Garda Commissioner took action. We know that come November, that the practice of recording conversations stops.
Did Sinn Féin pick it up?
That
did
it
Fianna
stops.
Did Fianna Fáil pick it up?
So, sorry, we're dealing with...
Did RTE
with,
pick it up?
That's irrelevant,
no, they didn't.
Alan. That is
they did not.
Pathetic.
Nobody picked this up. And
so
I think it would be terrific if we could turn back
whether,
the clock and
whether,
pick it up when
whether
it was
whether
reported,
the department
but we
saw the report
nobody
or not.
Picked it up.
That report sparked action within the system. And the question is, how is it that the minister did not know? And why should we accept that he did
know?
I'm not the minister for justice, in case you hadn't noticed.
No.
And if I were the minister for justice in those circumstances, and if I were being named and held to account, I would not run away and hide and say, they're playing. This is personal. This
nobody,
is not personal.
No.
This is about the discharge of a senior office.
Alan, does the minister not have a higher duty of care, though, regarding this issue?
Look,
he's the minister. He's in charge,
for goodness sake. The matter wasn't brought to the minister's attention.
Does he not have a higher duty
brought,
of care.
The minister was
you're
brought,
saying why
this matter was brought
Eno,
to the
minister.
Well, no, I'm not pointing fingers. I'm just drawing the analogy that nobody was aware of this. It went under the radar.
You're not comparing like with like, though.
I am drawing like with like.
Well, it was in the newspaper, you know. It was in the Irish Examiner.
Was it in the... Okay, well, hats off to the Examiner, but it wasn't
okay,
picked
I,
up
I really need to
media,
take a break, and we will move the conversation on to another interesting, intriguing element of this case. But first of all, a number of your texts on 51551. Ray in Kilkenny says, Shatter has finally apologised. It's too little, too late. He should now resign or be sacked. Another texter says, regarding Alan Shatter's apology, it's a matter of damned if you do and damned if you don't with the opposition parties. They are just looking for heads. He says, another texter says, confidential recipient sacked. Callanan retired or sacked. Attorney General, watch this space. Somebody else says, guys, stop. Nobody resigns in Irish politics, says Pat in Cork. Brendan Conroy says Alan Shatter will be sheltered by Labour because he is to Labour what Charlie McCreevy was to the PDs. And finally, John and Clare says Minister Shatter was happy to destroy the reputation of the whistleblowers so long as it suited his ends. If Minister Varadkar had not made his comments, Alan Shatter would still be standing over his comments regarding the whistleblowers. Shatter had no problem attacking the reputation of two honourable people to suit himself. That's why he should resign. He should have resigned as soon as the words left his mouth. We'll have more discussion on this after the break.
RTE Radio 1.
Text Late Debate on 51551.
And you're welcome back. It's Cormac O'Hara standing in for Audrey this evening. I'm with Alan Farrell, Mary Lou MacDonald, Michael Finucane and solicitor and Mark Kelly of the ICCL. Let's turn our attention now, if you don't mind, to the practice of recording phone calls to and from Gorda stations. Mark Kelly, will this really affect prosecutions that have been and may come before the courts? Are we likely to see a flood of appeals to the courts?
Well, it's already affecting them. There was a case this afternoon before the Special Criminal Court where proceedings were adjourned because the counsel informed the judge that consultations had been held between the solicitor and at least one, if not both, of the co-accused. And the trial has now temporarily been stopped. I'm not in private practice, but I would imagine that any criminal practitioner worth their salt at the moment is going through their files and looking for cases where this might very well be an issue.
And let's just ask Mike Finucane, are you reviewing your files now?
Actively. And I would say anyone with a criminal defence practice who's been representing people that were detained in Garda custody for the purposes of police interview is doing exactly the same. Because of the way the detention regime is operated by An Garda Síochána in this country, the solicitors are not permitted to remain with their clients while they're being interviewed. So you can go to the Garda station to advise someone, but then you have to leave again when they're being interviewed. And the dynamic of the situation requires telephone contact with your client. It's unavoidable. And because people are detained these days for longer and longer periods of time, you can find yourself speaking to a client early in the morning or right up until midnight, and sometimes even beyond midnight in certain circumstances. So it's often not possible or practical to go to a Garda station, so you're reliant on the telephone.
Are we talking then about a huge number of convictions likely to be appealed?
Well, it's too early to say. It's too early to say how many cases will reach the stage of appeal, but I think we can assume with a reasonable degree of confidence that a huge number of cases are going to have to be reviewed. And I think one thing the government needs to do urgently is to decide and explain how that review is going to take place, who's going to do it, and most important of all, how it is going to be demonstrably independent of any agency with any potential interest in the outcome. So no Garda involvement, no DPP involvement, no Justice Ministry involvement, demonstrably, completely and effectively independent of any agency that had that has a role in prosecution.
And can I make a massive leap, if you don't mind? Let's say a conviction, let's say there is an appeal and evidence was should have been inadmissible and that the conviction is quashed. What happens then? Is it a retrial or is the person free to go?
Well, there's a number of possibilities, but I think, all of those things are possible as well as the revelation of a huge number of miscarriages of justice, of people who are convicted of things wrongly as a result of evidence or information that was gathered by the An Garda Síochána through listening to confidential conversations between people and their solicitors.
And then are we talking possibly, and this is another leap, a civil action against the state and a huge amount of compensation?
A fair degree down the road, yes, that is a possibility. But which is why I say action needs to be taken swiftly so that the process of review, at least, can begin as quickly as possible.
Alan Farrell, how should these cases then be reviewed?
Well, I'm not a criminal lawyer, but I certainly have heard what has just been said there by Michael and others repeated during the course of the day. I certainly think it is something that we're going to have to look at swiftly. I mean, in terms of the Commission of Inquiry establishing what was on those tapes, transcribing them to paper and having them form part of this Tribunal of Inquiry or Commission of Investigation is obviously extremely important. It's important in terms of the administration of justice, and as has been highlighted, it's important that we ensure that if these tapes, can I just point out as well, we don't really know the condition of a lot of these tapes. I know it was reported earlier today that a number of these dictaphone tapes and NICE tapes, I don't know what they are. I Googled it, but I couldn't find anything.
A brand,
online,
apparently.
Apparently a brand of some kind, but I couldn't establish, or it has yet to be established, I should say, as to what condition these tapes are in. And it's actually only since 2008 when, you know, following the last general election, what can only assume is a considerable sum of money must have been invested to transfer or to create a digital recording system.
It was about €500,000.
Well, there
it's
you
a
go.
Public tender process.
Surely,
tender,
so. If the data on the tapes is in bad condition, surely that makes the evidence even more inadmissible, if that can be the case.
Well, I'm not a lawyer, and I think it's more appropriate to ask the question of the two solicitors present. But what my understanding of it is that first and foremost, as was said by Michael Noonan yesterday on RTE, consent is required for tapes to be admissible. And in the case that has been highlighted in Waterford, the consent, I understand, was not sought, and on that basis was not deemed admissible in the court. So I don't know what effect a series or thousands of tapes or recordings will have on the judicial process. That's not for me to decide.
Could this actually swamp the judicial system?
Well, actually, someone was making the point this morning that the number of tapes involved, the 2,400 tapes, is actually quite a small number if you think that this has been going on for decades. So the hope would be, in a pragmatic sense, that the number of them that really includes critical information that has been prejudicial would be quite small. But we simply don't know. We are talking here, though, about absolutely fundamental human rights. It's not just a question of the privilege that is between a solicitor and a client, but there's a constitutional right not to incriminate yourself, and there's a constitutional right to have a fair trial. And so the real worry would be if some of the material has been degraded, that damage may have been done, irretrievable prejudice may have been done to someone's prospects of having a fair trial. And it may be very, very difficult to undo that, because it may be very difficult to discern exactly what was listened to and what was used.
And how is the court likely to view that then? If the data was there when the conviction was got, now the data is gone, and we cannot judge the admissibility of the evidence or judge the strength of the evidence that is now deemed to be inadmissible.
Well, it's a I mean, if something was taped a long time ago and has subsequently degraded, we have to assume that it was useful at some point and was capable of being listened to. It's not perhaps a question of the evidence being admissible, but if you can demonstrate in any particular case that a confidential privileged communication between a solicitor and a client was recorded, you know, you're already into breach of constitutional rights territory. Now, if it becomes clear that other actions were taken, if it becomes clear that not only were recordings made, for example, but Gardaí listened to them and maybe even massaged or changed or manipulated evidence to conform with what they heard on the tape in order to improve a prosecution case, well, then you've got the worst possible scenario. That may or may not come to pass. But I think if once you can establish that a recording took place that shouldn't have, a conviction is in doubt.
Mary Lou McDonald, this is a highly complex web. How do you think it should be reviewed?
Well, just to say, we're obviously dealing with incomplete information, so we can't even say with absolute certainty the number of tapes or the number of recordings, much less what's on them. But bear in mind that the Taoiseach chose to brief the opposition party leaders, and all of this transpired because of a requirement of discovery in respect of a case that is live and I understand will be heard in very short order before the courts. So if you like, the first test of this is very much imminent. How matters should be reviewed. I mean, you could envisage a scenario where individuals might have an eye on how this case transpires. We were not permitted to make any commentary on it because it's obviously a matter before the courts. But I would imagine that there would be individuals watching that and others might take the initiative themselves, quite outside of any government-led or statutory inquiry or review process, to go to the courts themselves. That's one scenario. And it is incredibly complex. And there's, if you like, the vindication of individual rights in respect of current or historic cases. And then there's the overall vindication of the system, the administrative, the judicial system in itself. And I, at this, as we speak this evening, I cannot tell you precisely how that will unfold. But what I can tell you is that the seriousness of it could not be overstated. And
Mark?
Yeah, I mean, it's telling us something else as well, which is that our legal framework for surveillance, broadly speaking, is no longer fit for purpose. Minister Shatta was talking today about legislation from 1983 and 1993 that governs this area. It's completely out of date and out of kilter with the digital world. There is later legislation, but it also covers a narrow range of things with very limited judicial supervision. So if we're going to look at this, the tapes are an immediate problem. The miscarriages of justice potentially are an immediate problem. But we're going to have to look not just at the Garda Act 2005, and the Irish Council for Civil Liberties is looking forward to taking part in the review of that by the Oireachtas Justice Committee. But we have to look again at our surveillance legislation, and we have to look at surveillance practice, because this potentially is unlawful surveillance. And we've been saying for quite some time that is not yet properly regulated.
And it needs to be looked at.
Bear in mind also that the members of An Garda Síochána themselves are very, very animated and upset at the fact that telephone calls into and from their stations were being recorded. For the most part, they had no realisation,
right,
or so their representative organised.
The AGSI came out last night on primetime and again said it today and clarified that they were not aware of the recording.
Let me read a text to you, Alan Farrell. It says, it's from Gary, it says, I voted Fine Gael in the last election and probably will do again. However, can you please say to your Fine Gael panellist, enough is enough. The time for waffle is gone. Shatter has dropped the ball again and again. He needs to be fired, not even let resign. To coin a phrase, I find his continuance in office disgusting. Now, is there a danger that the Taoiseach, supporting Alan Shatter at every step here, is being sucked into the controversy himself, and the office of the Taoiseach and Enda Kenny may be damaged by this?
I certainly hope not. I don't have a crystal ball, so I can't really tell.
It's a very confident answer.
It's an honest answer. The answer that you're going to get from me is one that I would very much hope that the steps that the government are taking to resolve these various issues, which fall under one ministry, can be resolved by that ministry and by Alan Shatter with the assistance of the Taoiseach and indeed the various investigations that are going to take place. The various reviews that we have put in place and indeed the legislative changes that we have proposed, and I might point out again at the opportunity presents me, that we instigated these changes before this issue
arose. I understand
that.
Come back to the Taoiseach, though. What do you make of Micheál Martin's assertion today that he effectively sacked Martin Callanan by sending a senior official to Martin Callanan the night before?
No, I think the serious issue. It was an exceptionally serious issue that came to the information of An Taoiseach. He chose to deal with it in the manner in which he believes was most appropriate.
You don't think he effectively sacked Martin
Callanan? No, absolutely not. I mean, look, the former Commissioner Callanan, there's a statement available, it's broadly available online, as to the precise reasons that he has outlined as to why
what do you think the aim of Enda Kenny's messenger was then?
I think the aim of his messenger from the Department of Justice, I think it was the Secretary General of the Department of Justice, was to discuss the matter that had been brought to his attention by the Attorney General on Sunday evening. As I have said, I believe it was a matter of such significance that he felt it necessary to interrupt the man's weekend.
The Commissioner should be made aware of the gravity of how I, Enda Kenny, felt about this and its implications.
Yeah.
Now, what other option did Martin Callanan have after that?
I can't hypothesise as to why Martin Callanan or why he did not choose to take the steps that he took. His rationale was that he took it for family reasons and with regard to his office as Garda Commissioner.
It had nothing to do with Enda Kenny's messenger then?
Well, the Commissioner has stated his reasons for retiring. Early. Let's remember that he was over the age of retirement for that rank within An Garda Síochána. He was offered an extension, which he took, and he chose to terminate that extension prematurely.
Michael Finucane, briefly.
There's no point in going back over this ground again. You know, this can be worked out at leisure in some sort of commission-type vehicle. But just to emphasise the necessity for some kind of expeditious fast-tracked process for reviewing the surveillance material that has come out of the phone program revelations, because you know we could be talking about people who are still in jail.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot await the outcome of a commission of investigation, even one that breaks all records on under statute. That has to happen now.
Okay, and you have the final word this evening. And Focal Scouting Mersin, Michael Finucane, Solicitor, Agus Muirchis, Lishna Hiana, Ella, Mark Kelly, Mary Lou MacDonald, Agus Alan Farrell, Wimshe, Agus Unwedden and Joe, Gujia Mordach, Agija, Slán Agus Manacht.